Okay, none of you feel like I do. I'm ready to shout. We're back to, this has been one of the most chaotic weeks for me that I can remember in a long, long time. And I am just glad to be doing something that's in my regular routine. And that is back in church. It's just been up and down all week long. Betty Tidwell, which was my kid's grandmother, passed away late Thursday night, about 10:16 in the evening. I had six of my seven, of course, Josh wasn't here, so six of my seven kids were in town for the week, many of them staying at our house, and then getting the flu bug that went around. Matt was here and went home yesterday, and he got it Friday night and had it all night. Our grandkids have had it different times. We had, I think, 20 people in the hospital room that one night as Betty was passing away, and everybody just shared everything, including the flu bug. So it was a pretty bad situation. Then other family things going on all during the week, trying to find time to get my work done, what I needed to get done, and forsake the family for all that. And so I'm just glad to be here this morning and looking forward to a different week than last week was. We have those moments sometimes. You all know what that's like. All right, Brother Travis, if you'll come and help me. We even have a Sunday school lesson for today. If you were here with us Wednesday, you know we didn't do our regular study. That's because time didn't give me the ability to get everything done, so we had a different lesson on Wednesday night, but now we get back to our regularly scheduled programming. Proverbs chapter 8. A new chapter in Proverbs this morning. Proverbs chapter 8. Again, to summarize, the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs center on the theme of wisdom. Before Solomon taught his young son about any of the other academic issues of life, he told him that the most important thing, the principal thing, was to have wisdom. And he again will emphasize that here in Proverbs chapter 8 this morning, emphasizing the importance of wisdom over silver and gold and rubies and riches and durable riches. How many folks do you know in this life that are more interested in getting wisdom than they are wealth? How many of us would say we're more interested in getting wisdom than we are the luxuries of this life? And if we're going to be honest, we'll say this. We do not value wisdom the way the Bible teaches us to value it. And so that's the importance of the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs. You and I, let's be honest, folks, you and I haven't gotten past the first nine chapters of Proverbs. I've been saved 40-some years. I haven't gotten past the first nine chapters of Proverbs because I don't recognize the value of wisdom. We've looked at wisdom's plea in chapter 1. We looked at wisdom's protection in chapter 2. We looked at wisdom's path in chapter 3 and 4. We looked at wisdom's principles in chapter 5. Wisdom's precepts in chapter 6. We looked last time at wisdom's presence in chapter 7. Now we come to the last two chapters, chapters 8 and 9, and this will be about wisdom's patience. We kind of read about that. If you look back at chapter 1 and verse number 20, he said in chapter 1, verse 20, "Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings in the gates, in the city she uttereth her word, saying, How long? How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge." Those two words in verse 22, how long, show the patience of wisdom. That she is always crying and always calling out. And it's never too late. It's never too late to seek after wisdom. And we would all agree to this, it's never too late to need wisdom. So we're going to be looking this morning in Proverbs chapter 8 at wisdom's patience. Verse 1 says, "Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of the high places, by the way in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. Well, chapter 8, verse 1 through 9, as we begin this morning, we're going to look and see that wisdom is available to all. Wisdom is available to all. Again, back in chapter 1, verse 20, we just read it. She crieth in the streets. We saw it at that point. That wisdom is not reserved for any class of people. It's not for the educated. It's not for the wealthy. It's not for the healthy. Wisdom is available to everybody, from the prince to the pauper, from the rich to the poor. Everybody has wisdom available. And that's a wonderful thing. Wisdom's not based on education. Wisdom's not even based on IQ. Some folks that have never gotten a high school diploma are the wisest of all people. And so the wonderful thing about this thing about wisdom is it's not relegated to any certain group or class of people. It's available to everyone. From the eldest to the youngest, we can be in pursuit of wisdom. Wisdom is available to all. She crieth in the streets. Here in verse number 1 it says, doth not wisdom cry? And understanding put forth her voice. Notice letter A, where wisdom stands. Where wisdom stands. And where is it she stands? Well, it tells us five places in verse 1 to 3. She standeth in the top of high places. What does that mean? Well, she's lofty, she's high, she's where everybody can see her. Wisdom is public, it's visible. It says, by the way, in the places of the paths. She's at every corner, every turning place. At the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Everywhere you go, wisdom is there. She's made available to all. She standeth in every place. We've been noticing that Solomon, in writing to his son, has been jumping back and forth from this strange woman, this wicked woman, to wisdom. In chapter 2, he dealt with the wicked woman. In chapter 5, 6, and 7, there are portions. He'll finish chapter 9 with a reference to it one more time. And he jumps back between these two things. And the contrast between them is so remarkable. And that's what he's trying to point out to his son. If you follow her, you won't have wisdom. Wisdom will keep you from her corner, from her door, from her room. See, everything that she does is private. Everything she does is behind closed doors. Everything she does is out of public view. But wisdom is out there in the open. Wisdom is at the top of the high places, in the places of the pass, at the gates, at the entry of the gate. Wisdom doesn't have to hide. Wisdom doesn't have to be ashamed of where it is or where it leads us or where it takes us. And so Solomon is trying to show his son where wisdom stands. Notice he says in verse 1, doth not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? Wisdom has some twins. And understanding is one of those. We'll come across another one maybe this morning, maybe next week. But wisdom has some twins, and one is understanding. 24 times in Proverbs, or 24 times in the Bible, wisdom and understanding are likened together in the same verse. 17 of those 24 times, it's in Proverbs. 17 times, wisdom and understanding, wisdom and understanding, wisdom and understanding. They're grouped together. They are two things that go together. To have understanding, you have to have wisdom. And if you have wisdom, you'll have understanding. They're not separate entities. They're two things that come together. And so Solomon is telling his son, wisdom cries and understanding puts forth her voice. It's in a public place. She's standing out in the open. Notice letter B. Whom wisdom seeks. Again, it's available to all. It's in a public place, crying to everyone, and it seeks everyone. It says in verse number 4, "Unto you, O men, I cry." Now, the word men in the Bible in this instance is not gender specific. All right, it's talking about mankind, all people. Eve needed wisdom as well as Adam did. If Eve would have had wisdom even when Adam hadn't, things might be different right now, because she might not have been subdued by the devil, by the serpent, and then given it to Adam to eat. So wisdom is not just for men, but all of mankind. He says, "And my voice is to the sons of men." That's all of humanity. Wisdom is seeking everyone. "Oh, you simple, understand wisdom. And you fools, be of an understanding heart." Whether simple ones or fools or the educated, wisdom is seeking everybody. Wisdom's trying to break in to some places. The halls of higher learning, I think, sometimes have their doors shut to wisdom. Many times, too many churches have their doors shut to wisdom. Too many homes probably have their doors shut to wisdom. Hopefully not ours. But at the same time, maybe we don't have our doors wide open, asking for wisdom to come in. Whom wisdom seeks. You know, if those down through the ages would have sought wisdom, things, the world would be completely different. Had Cain sought wisdom, he'd have not been expelled and stricken with a mark that marked him as a vagabond for the rest of his life. Had the people of Noah's day sought wisdom, there would not have been the deluge and a universal flood that wiped out all of mankind. Had Nimrod sought after wisdom, there would not have been a Tower of Babel where they tried to be an affront to God and build themselves up right up to that very place. Had Ishmael sought wisdom, they would not be the enemy of God's people to this very day. Had Esau sought wisdom, the Bible never would have said, "Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated." And down through the line, through Achan, Samuel, Eli, Saul, Absalom, Shimei, Joab, Rehoboam, Ahab, Judas, Demas. All of these men, if they had sought after wisdom as wisdom was seeking after them, their lives would have been completely different. And the same thing is true today. In all society and all of the world and all the people that are out there, if they'd be seeking after wisdom, this world would be completely different. But instead, we're seeking wealth, seeking education, seeking peace on earth and goodwill toward men without Jesus Christ. And it's not working out very good. Whom wisdom seeks, he says, "Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things." The wonderful thing about wisdom is you can identify her voice because it's right things, of excellent things. You don't get wisdom from the television set. You don't get wisdom from social media. You don't get wisdom from the sources that the world is all going to for their wisdom. Wisdom speaks excellent things. You don't have to hear them beeping out a word when it's wisdom. You don't have to fast forward past something when it's excellent speech, when it's right things. You don't have to get a filter for your television if it's wisdom. But because we live in a world that's not looking for wisdom, they're looking for entertainment, looking for happiness and joy in all the wrong places, wisdom is still seeking them. Letter C, as we look at wisdom, is available to all, not only where wisdom stands and whom wisdom seeks, but verse 7 to 9, why wisdom summons. S-U-M-M-O-N-S. Summons. "She crieth in the streets, how long, O ye simple ones, will you love simplicity?" She's crying out, she's calling for people to welcome her. She's summoning people. Verse 7 says, "For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Why wisdom summons? Number one, because her words are sound. She offers us sound words. It says in verse 7, for my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. She offers us sound words. My mouth shall speak truth. You know what the problem is? We are so surrounded by lies that we have a problem identifying the truth. When I want to get a news source, when I want to find out about something, I don't go to one source, because in this world you can't trust anyone. So I have three or four different sources from different backgrounds, let's put it that way. Conservative, liberal, whatever, and I want to get the whole picture, the whole story, because too many times we go to the ones we want to tell us what to think. We go to the ones that we usually agree with, and so we just ask them, and then they tell us what we're supposed to think, and we're no different than the other group is. And so you get both sides of the story, and you see where they're coming from, where the truth is, and then you make an educated decision. Not someone else making it for you. You make your own decision by looking at the facts from both sides as they're presented. Isn't this the way life is supposed to be? Isn't this what we teach our children? When opportunity knocks, look at the opportunities, weigh the pros and the cons, and then make a decision. And so when those things happen, we're to look at those things and find out what's going on. But too many times, it's hard to discern who's telling the truth and who's lying. Because most of the time, they're both lying. Most of the times they're presenting their case and their agenda and their story, and finding the real truth behind it can be very difficult. But when wisdom speaks, the Bible says, my mouth shall speak truth. It's relaxing to listen to wisdom. It's refreshing to hear wisdom. And one of the reasons is because it's so rare. My mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. We live in an age of propaganda, political correctness, amorality. You know what amorality is? There is no right. There is no wrong. And so it's hard to get the right thing. Now, I say that in the worldly frame, the secular frame, whatever it is, but the same thing is true in the spiritual frame. The Mormons will tell you that Joseph Smith was a prophet sent from God who found some stones buried there in upstate New York. And when he put them in a little hat and wore a special pair of glasses, it gave him the Book of Mormon. And we're to believe that. The Roman Catholic Church tells us that the Pope, when he sits on his throne in the Vatican, that everything that comes out of his mouth is exactly like it's coming out the mouth of God. They call it ex cathedra. He's speaking. When he sits on that throne, God is working through him, and everything he says is just as much from God as any verse in the Bible. And we're supposed to believe that. Hinduism tells us that all of their gurus are holy men of God. And there's people that believe it. The Muslims will tell us that the Quran is divinely inspired. And there's people that believe it. Liberal theologians will tell us that salvation can be earned by living a good life or by works. And many people believe it. See, lying is not just the art of the politician. A lot of preachers doing the same thing. And we have to be able to understand that wisdom's words are sound. There is no foolishness. My mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. God despises abomination. God won't even speak of it. It's interesting to note that the things that society today speaks of so glibly and so freely, and things that description, my wife, we get a Christian magazine, a Christian news magazine, and it's like Time or Newsweek or something, but it's called World Magazine. It's a Christian news magazine, and before I got to it, she got to it, and she ripped three pages out of it because she felt that they were being too descriptive of certain, the Me Too movement and all that stuff, and they were writing about it, and she said, there's stuff in here I didn't want to read, and I don't want my kids coming in here and picking this magazine. And that's really a very conservative magazine, and yet the same problem. And that's, they don't do that very often. And Sonia started, I noticed some pages were ripping out. I said, what? She said, well, here's what it was all about. And I said, wait a minute. If you ripped it out because you didn't want to know about it, please don't tell me. I don't want to know what it said, because if it was that bad that offended you, I'm not going to like it either. But in the world we live in, wickedness is all around us, at every door and every opportunity. But my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. Wisdom summons because her words are sound. Number two, wisdom summons because her words are straight. Her words are straight. Verse 8 says, all the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. The words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward. We've talked a lot about that word froward, and that's because it appears 14 times in Proverbs. I hate autocorrect. Have I ever said that before? Whether I'm texting and it autocorrects when I'm trying to spell something and it wants to spell it differently. Or if I'm typing these outlines, I had to go, every time I try to type the word froward, autocorrect changes it to forward. And it's the opposite. And I think on maybe the second page or somewhere, there's a place where I missed it when it auto-corrected it, and I printed it off before I caught it. But froward, as we talked about, is opposite of forward. Forward means going that in that direction. Froward means going off from that direction. Going crooked. And that's why we're talking about wisdom summons, because her words are straight. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward. They're not out of line. They're not crooked. There's nothing perverse, nothing perverse in them. That magazine could have something, a Christian, basically Christian magazine, could have something that's perverse in it, is sad. Not shocking or surprising, but sad. But I don't know about you, but how many times have you been disappointed in the speech of a fellow believer? Doesn't mean they're not saved, doesn't mean that but there's just something, sometimes some perverse things come out. Some language that's not edifying. But wisdom's not that way. Her words are always straight. That's why we need wisdom so bad. Let's be honest, do we need wisdom every time we open our mouth? And so here's the preacher's job, to get up here for 30, 40 minutes and expound on the Word of God. If anybody needs wisdom, if anybody should be on their knees asking God to watch the words of their mouth, it'd be the person that has to stand up here. So believe me, when I stand up here saying all this, man, I'm preaching to me before I preach to anybody else. Because we need wisdom. How many times we say, boy, I put my foot in my mouth, or I wish I hadn't said that. Now, you don't know how many times I go home from church and say things like that. Because we miss up on wisdom sometimes. Wisdom's words are straight. Then thirdly, under why wisdom summons. Because her words are sound, because her words are straight. Number three, because her words are simple. Her words are simple. You don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to have a higher education. You don't have to have an astounding IQ to have wisdom. In fact, wisdom usually prefers or is usually found in those without those things. The Stephen Hawkings of the world, whose IQs exceed 160, the Thomas Edisons of the world, have so much knowledge in their head, far beyond anything you and I could even comprehend. We can't even begin to compete with them, educationally, intellectually. But one thing they were extremely lacking in was wisdom. Stephen Hawking could look at the universe and see everything out there except God. What a sad thing to see to look at those stars and galaxies and be able in his mind to compute all the mathematical facts and information about that and miss the one glaring thing. The God that created it all. Because with all of his intelligence, wisdom was nowhere to be found. Wisdom's words are simple. Verse number 9 says, they are all plain to him that hath understanding. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Understanding. Knowledge. I like Solomon's first act of wisdom. Back in 1 Kings 3, right after he prayed and asked God for wisdom, the first opportunity he had to use it, if you remember the story, of all people, it was two harlots. They both had a baby 3 days apart. And one night shortly thereafter, one of the babies died in the sleep. And the woman whose baby died came and switched babies with the one who was living. You know the story. She took the one that was living and the one whose baby was alive and had been taken during the night and switched came before the king and told the story and said, she took my baby and now she's got it and I want my baby back. And now Solomon has to make a decision over how to fix that thing. And you think of all the complicated, now there was no DNA testing back then, so he didn't have that to fall back on. Apparently there was no birthmarks to identify which baby belonged to which one. There were no eyewitnesses that saw the thing take place. And so that's where our legal court systems would all be looking for now, but they didn't have anything of those things. So Solomon's just left on his own. He's hanging out there. How do I make a decision? All the kingdom is looking at him. What are you going to do? And what he did was so simple, yet so profound. Bring the living baby to me. This mother claims it's hers. That mother claims it's hers. Bring the baby to me and bring me a sword. We'll cut the baby in half, give half to each one. You say, how terrible. Oh, Solomon knew what he's doing. One woman said, that's right. That's the way that, give her half and me half. That's the way it should be. The other woman, the Bible says, whose the baby was, whose the infant was, said, slay it not, give it to her. Solomon automatically knew which one was the mother of the baby. The one that was willing to split it in half, that wasn't the mother. The one that said, I'd rather lose it than you kill it. Solomon said, that's the mother, give her the baby. Simple. To him that hath understanding. So the Bible says they are all plain to him that understandeth and right to them that find knowledge. Wisdom is available to all, verse 1 to 9. Then verse 10 to 21. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all things that may be desired are not to be compared to her. Number 2, wisdom has riches that are real. Wisdom is available to all, verse 1 to 9, and wisdom has riches that are real, verse 10 to 21. In these verses, we'll read about verse number 10 and 11. Silver, gold, rubies. We'll read about riches, honor, durable riches, substance, and treasure. All these things are likened or compared to wisdom, and wisdom is found to exceed all of them. If you put the silver, the gold, and the rubies, the treasure, and the durable riches, and all that together, Solomon says wisdom is more important than all. And don't you know he knew what he was talking about? Because he had all those material possessions. He had the gold and the silver. He had the rubies. He had the durable riches. He had substance and treasure. But what he lacked so many times was wisdom. That's why he's emphasizing that to his child. Son, here's where I messed up. Here's with everything I've got and the wealth and the riches I've got. Here's where I made my mistakes by not seeking after wisdom. Why did Solomon so often, chapter 2, chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 9, come back to that strange woman, that wicked? Because that's where his wisdom failed him. And that's why he emphasized it with his son. And now he's saying, I've got all the wealth and riches I could ever hope for. But more important than all of these piled together, son, is wisdom. Wisdom has riches that are real. Letter A, as we look at verse 10 and 11, we see wisdom's value. Wisdom's value. Receive my instruction and not silver. And I've underlined these three words, silver. Knowledge rather than choice, gold. For wisdom is better than rubies. And all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. The wealthiest man in the world is the poorest man in the world if he doesn't have wisdom. And the poorest man in the world is the richest man in the world if he has wisdom. Think about the rich man and Lazarus. Which one was rich? Easy call. Which one was wise? Easy call. Because one is in Abraham's bosom in Luke, and the other is in a place called hell being in torments. Wisdom and wealth compared. Wisdom's value. Silver, gold, rubies, these are all things. Someone has said this, a poor man spends his life worrying about the things he does not have. The poor man spends his life worrying about the things he does not have. The rich man spends his life worrying about the things he does have. Who's going to take them? Who's going to get them when I die? How's this going to work out? Things. That's what the world is concerned with. And Luke chapter 12 and verse 15 says, a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. It's not about things. Wisdom's value. Letter B, verse 12 and 13, wisdom's virtue. Wisdom's virtue. Riches tend to make people dirty. Riches tend to make people dirty. Robert Kraft, does the name sound familiar? If you've been watching the news, the owner of the New England Patriots, one of the wealthiest of owners, his team has won how many Super Bowls? And yet now has been caught up in a scandal because in spite of all his wealth, he's been found guilty in committing immorality, going into a house of prostitution down in Florida during the playoff times and all that. And now his name is marred for the rest of his life. He had a sparkling character. His wife died a few years ago. He was just the epitome of the grandfather and the father and the great-grandfather and the businessman and the team owner. Everybody looked to him, and now he goes to the business meetings of the owners and sits in a corner silently because nobody cares what he says anymore because of an act of indiscretion. Wealth and wisdom don't often go together. And Solomon is talking about wisdom's. He talks about wisdom's value, then he talks about wisdom's virtue. Number one, under wisdom's virtue, where she dwells. Where she dwells, the first half of verse 12. I, wisdom, wisdom speaks. Again, we saw it personified earlier. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. Now again, we saw in verse number one, there were some twins. Wisdom and understanding are closely associated. But now we have another one, wisdom and prudence. Wisdom and prudence go together. There's only three times in the Bible where the word prudence appears. And every one of them, it's associated, wisdom's in the same place. Wisdom's in the same verse. They're twins. Wisdom and prudence. I looked up the word prudence in the 1868 dictionary, Webster's dictionary, and it defined prudence as cautious, circumspect, and I like this one, practically wise. Not impatient, that's what prudence is. Not impatient, not knee-jerk, not reacting quickly. Practically wise, cautious, circumspect. I, wisdom, deal with prudence. I see Solomon sitting on that throne, making that decision concerning those two women and the live baby. And I don't see him waiting for them to get the last words out of his mouth, their mouth, so he can jump in and speak. I see him with prudence, cautiously, considering what he's just heard, asking God to give him the right answer and the right words, not jumping in too quickly. Rehoboam did. You remember that story? Rehoboam making a decision when the people came to him and said, make our burden lighter and lighten our task. He just shot off. He just answered quickly after considering with the old men and the wise men. He didn't spend any time praying about it, thinking about it. No prudence. And he made an unwise decision that divided the kingdom from that time forward. Solomon had wisdom with prudence. He was cautious. He was slow to respond. Wisdom's value, wisdom's virtue. Where she dwells with prudence. Number two, what she does. Try to get through number two and three, and then we'll be done this morning. What she does. And I like. What does she do? She finds out knowledge of witty inventions. I like those two words. Witty inventions. Witty inventions. That's a King James Bible phrase. Because none of the others say it like that. The NIV and the ESV say, she finds out knowledge and discretion. Discretion's a good word, and it appears many times in the Bible. But this is talking about witty inventions. No matter, it's kind of two ways. Number one, wisdom gives men the ability to come up with witty inventions. Number two, wisdom can overrule the witty inventions of the wicked. They can't outfox God. They can't outsmart God. Oh, we'll build a tower that reaches to heaven. And this isn't in the Bible, but I'm God just saying, how do you think that's going to work out for you? Cain slaying Abel and thinking he's going to get away with it. Well, how does that work out? God, wisdom, is able to overrule witty inventions. But also think about God. It's God that gives men the ability to come up with these things. You know, Wilbur and Orville, when they invented their flying machine, wasn't because they were rocket scientists. They had some practical wisdom. And they came up with a pretty witty invention. I could go through a long list of inventions that have been then come up with. I like what Thomas Edison, when he was doing the light bulb, they say that he said, I've tried this 1,000 different ways so far, and it hasn't worked yet. And they said, why don't you give up? He said, because now I know 1,000 ways it will not work. That's a wise man. All right. That's because you know how I know that? Because I know how many times I do the same thing over again thinking I'm going to get a different result from it. How many times people do the same thing over and over again? It didn't work last time. Let's try it again this time. My car broke down Thursday night at Winterset Kitchen. You turn the key and there's absolutely nothing. You know, no matter how many times I turned that key, it didn't make a difference. Walk away from the car, sneak up on it, and then turn it real fast. It didn't start. Walk out, do this, wait 5 minutes. We looked it up online. Well, do this. It didn't make any difference. So I'm just sharing this with you. This was my week. So I paid $135 because I called my insurance company. We can't find any record of your insurance policy. I had the policy number on the paper in front of me, had my home address, the last 8 numbers of my digits of my VIN number, everything. Well, I'm sorry. And this is 10 o'clock at night. I'm sorry. We don't have any record of that. You'll have to pay out of your pocket, then go to your agent and they'll reimburse you. And I'm thinking, yeah, I've been down this road before. $135, the guy comes in, gets there at 11 o'clock at night, loads up my vehicle. Oh, I've got the wrong truck here. They didn't tell. Well, I told him it was parked nosed in like that. And so he gets it. Matt, he gets it home. He puts it, drops it in my parking lot, parked in a way that blocks all my other cars in. And he parks it out there. And I go to bed and say, J. Frank Norris said, when the world gets on you like that, lift the windows up, get some fresh air in, go to bed, and let the world go to hell till morning. That sounds pretty rough, but sometimes that's the way you feel. And so I just said, I'm not going to worry about it. So the next morning I get up, I got to get out and go somewhere, but that vehicle's in my way. I said, I'm just going to go try it, turn the key, it starts right up. After all that other stuff. I wish I had a witty invention. Something that makes those things go. But witty, you know, the pet rock, that was a pretty witty invention. Pretty big ripoff, but a pretty witty invention. What she does. And we'll have to stop there. Number three, we'll get to next week. What she detests. Wisdom dwells, what wisdom does, and what wisdom detests. Father, thank you for your word. God, thank you that your word is something that we can live out practically in our life. And Father, I pray you give us a desire above all other things to have this wisdom. God, we need it so desperately and so badly, and yet we generally value it so little. Give us this wisdom that's necessary. Bless our morning service, those that come to join us, in Jesus' name. Amen. Take a short break. We'll begin our morning.